Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. When we talk about homelessness in the United States, we rarely talk about the older homeless population, and their numbers are on the rise. According to the latest statistics from Hearth, an organization working to end elder homelessness, there were 40,750 homeless people 62 or older in 2012. And as the nation's population ages, that number is expected to more than double by 2050. And if you talk to homeless advocates, they say that number is actually incredibly rare. It used to be that homeless people over 50 were blessedly rare. Marie O'Connor, who works with the St. Anthony Foundation, says, quote, "To see homeless elders back then was shocking, but today it is the norm." So what explains the increase? What challenges do older homeless people face? And what are cities doing to help this growing vulnerable segment of our society in light of major cuts to social services and the lack of affordable housing? Today we are joined by James Powell, case manager with the Cannon Kipp Senior Center. They provide hot lunches, case management, and community services to low-income people 60 years and older. Over half of their clients are currently or formerly homeless, and James has been doing this work for 20 years. And James joins us in studio. Hi, James. Thanks for coming
in. How are you doing?
Great. Thank you for joining us. We're also joined in studio by Barbara Coleman. Barbara was homeless for 11 months until she found housing through the St. Anthony Foundation. Barbara is now an activist working to improve conditions for homeless people in the Tenderloin District of San Francisco. She volunteers with the St. Anthony Foundation, the Tenderloin Garden Project, and the Senior Action and Planning for Elders. Barbara is a busy woman at the ripe age of 72. Hi, Barbara. Thank you for coming in.
Hi, Judith. Thank you for having me.
And we're joined by Adrienne Beloyne. She's Director of Outreach for Hearth. That's an organization dedicated to the elimination of homelessness among the elderly through housing, outreach, and advocacy. Hi, Adrienne. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Great to have you. So, James, I want to start off with you because you work with this population on a regular basis, and you've been doing this work for 20 years. What has really changed over the past few decades?
What has changed the most is that the problem has exacerbated in many ways. First of all, a lot of the social service agencies and services that were available in the 70s and 80s are dried up. And that has left those who are most vulnerable, the ones who are displaced, and in many cases they're displaced to the street because they don't have any funds. They don't have enough money to obtain a place to stay. And in some cases, it comes as a result of their children who are crack addicted. Some of the folks have actually owned their own homes, but they have had to flee from their own homes as a result of the intimidation of their children. Second of all, we're talking about a population of people who worked.
Mm-hmm.
These are the persons who helped to bring America to the place that it is now.
Mm-hmm.
They worked daily. They had the work ethic. And in some cases, the work that they did wasn't great amount of wages available, but they saved their money. And in some cases, for one reason or another, they lost their savings. So there's a myriad of reasons why the senior population find themselves in this particular dilemma.
Right, there's no one story.
Everyone has a story.
Adrienne, you work with Hearth. This is an organization dedicated to the elimination of homelessness among the elderly. We don't spend much time talking about the older homeless population in this country. Why do you think that is, as it's on the rise?
I think it was kind of a cohort that moved into homelessness, and it was a little bit unanticipated. I'm not sure why, because there's kind of been this bubble of folks that have been homeless coming out of the baby boomer generation, and now naturally they're becoming elderly. So people are surprised that this is an issue that we have on our plates now, but there's really no excuse for it since we've been seeing it come all along.
Well, so tell us what we are facing and how have things changed just over the last few decades?
Well, we serve people that are in Boston, so we're on the other side of the country, and we've just had a blizzard, so our folks are contending with a lot of difficulties on the street these days. And there's 3,000 people in Boston that are over the age of 50, and that's what we look at as a group that we call older adults, because when folks are over the age of 50, if they've been chronically homeless, they have a lot of frailties involved that cause them to be more of an elderly class, because they have issues that make their aging process accelerated. So we're looking at the 3,000 folks that are over the age of 50 in Boston, and our small group is serving roughly around 400 of them a year. As far as what's changed, it's just the population has grown, and what's not changed is that the housing opportunities have not grown with them. So as more and more people are homeless and elderly folks that really need to have a supportive community environment, affordable, we have a lot of folks that become homeless where they've been living independently in their working lives, and then they've had a devastation where they've lost income or they've lost ability to work, they've lost a spouse, and now they're unable to afford the rents in Boston, for example, that are just too hard for someone to afford on Social Security.
Right. And I just finished a three-month investigation looking at this issue, and I found that the average Social Security check, at least among the women that I interviewed, was around $800, $900 a month. Is that what you find?
I find that that's even a little bit on the high side.
Really?
So we look at folks that are more around the $500 range.
Wow.
And that's 500. What they're contending with. Certainly 800 is a common number, but it's anywhere between there. And we have a lot of folks that have no access to income at all. We have folks that either aren't qualifying for disability or they're finding themselves unemployable because they are older and they do have frailties and the work market is so difficult. So there's people that don't have access to benefits and income at all.
The other common comment I heard was, I never thought I would find myself in this position. Do you hear that also?
We do hear that a lot, because in addition to the folks that we meet out in the shelters, my outreach team goes out to shelters in Boston. We meet those folks, and they're already homeless, and they're looking to us to try to move out of that situation. We have a small at-risk program, and these at-risk programs are kind of newly budding up, but there's not enough out there for the folks that are coming to us in these situations. But in our at-risk program, we find that people have never been in situations where they thought that they would be homeless. They've had supports in their lives. They've had stable income, and then all of a sudden, everything's kind of swept out from underneath them. And a lot of the folks we serve in that category are women. So in the shelters, a lot of the folks are men that we serve. The individuals are men. And we certainly serve homeless women as well. But in the at-risk population, more than half of the people that are calling us and asking for help are women that are on their own.
That is Adrienne Beloyne, Director of Outreach with Hearth, an organization that's dedicated to the elimination of homelessness among the elderly. This is a growing population in the United States. Barbara Coleman is here in studio. Barbara was homeless for 11 months until she found housing through the St. Anthony Foundation, and now she's a fireball activist working to improve conditions for homeless people in the Tenderloin. Barbara, you're one of these women who said, I never thought this would happen to me.
Yes. In 1979, when I arrived in San Francisco, I came out, already had a job. I just was referred to another facility out here. And after a few years of working in San Francisco, I survived and got up on my feet. And when I did, I went back home to help a son that was not in good standing there. And so I brought him out here. And in my home, he started using drugs. I didn't know this because I'm working every day.
You're a nurse.
Yes. And he got belligerent is when I really found out about it. Yeah, he start talking to me in a different kind of way than he was when he, first came out. And I didn't know that he even knew anyone, So until it just came to a head one Saturday morning. And that's when I knew that I had to leave the situation, not knowing that I was going into homelessness. I didn't know that because I never was in that kind of position before. By having a job all the time, by keeping a place to stay, you give yourself 5 years to do something. I came to this city. I gave myself 5 years. I was already ready, you know, work ethic, everything. I was ready to do what I had to do to survive. And but bringing family members in, that's where it all started.
And that's the other thing. How did your family respond to this? Did they take you in? Did they help you?
Yes. My sister, she took me in, but her friend did not want me there. So I had to kind of branch out on my own, not knowing anything about San Francisco. So I had to kind of branch out on my own. And when I did, it was kind of hard at first. I had to learn how to connect to my job, how to connect to different organizations that'll help me. And I did.
How common is a story like this, James?
It repeats itself over and over and over again. As she speaks, it's like a ditto. It's like a tape that continues to run with the same scenario. I work with several senior women who have had similar situations where one was given the opportunity or was called here in San Francisco to come live with her son in another state. And the lady gave up a 12-year apartment to move to the other state to live with her son. When she got there, she ran into difficulties with the son's wife, to the point that the son says, you have to leave, you've got to go. Now what happens? The lady comes back to San Francisco. She has lost this long-term apartment and now cannot find one because it was subsidized.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the kinds of things that we're talking about, along with, as I mentioned earlier, children who have fallen into substance abuse, that the effects on senior women who can't give up the mothering, they can't give up the mothering, and it ends up taking everything they have, and it displaces them to the streets. I want to say that they deserve to have some reward for the time that they put in through the years of raising their mm-hmm. children, of working, of going to work, of participating in organizations and contributing to society. They deserve that, and they deserve it if for no other reason than a place to stay, a clean, safe place to stay, food, and the opportunity to socialize with people who are in their aging process.
That is James Powell. He's case manager with the Cannon Kipp Senior Center. Adrian Beloyne is director of outreach with Hearth. And Barbara Coleman was homeless for 11 months. She's now in housing, thanks to the St. Anthony Foundation, and she's an activist working to improve conditions for homeless people. Today we are talking about the growing older homeless population in the U.S. We don't talk about this population much, but according to the statistics, this population is on the rise. It's expected to more than double by 2050. So if you'd like to join us, if you work with this population, I wrote this article about older homeless people. I cannot tell you how many emails I'm receiving from people around the country saying, I am on the edge. I fear that this is going to be my situation in a year or two because I've lost, I no longer have a job. I might have $800 on Social Security. How am I going to make ends meet on this? So if you're in this predicament, We'd love to hear your story. If you work in this, if you work with homeless people, what are you seeing? What changes have you seen? And then the number one question is, how should we as a society deal with this growing issue? How should the government deal with this issue? We did invite the city of San Francisco to come on the show. They said they'd try to find someone. So far, we haven't received a call back, but we're hoping to get someone during this hour. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. And before we go to calls, Adrian, I just wanted to ask you, what explains this? Why is this increasing? Is it because the baby boomer generation is aging at such a rapid rate?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's just this huge flux of people, like I spoke about before, that are just now coming online to being homeless. But, you know, just the housing and how expensive housing is just making this impossible for people to sustain independently. So when folks are in situations where they've lost their income or they're dealing with $500 or $800 a month to live on, they need subsidized housing. And subsidized housing is, you know, there's plenty of it out there, but there's not enough. And so we can, you know, for example, we can scour every affordable housing opportunity far and wide to try to place one of the people we serve into housing, and it could take over a year for that opportunity to come up, even for someone who's prioritized for being elderly, prioritized for being homeless, which they are in Boston, they're not in every community, prioritized for being disabled, for example. So we work every angle, and that's how long it takes for a unit to become available.
So homeless people in Boston actually get priority.
Homeless people in Boston get priority at the Boston Housing Authority and also in a few other developments where the subsidy allows for them to have a homeless priority. So in some other communities, homelessness isn't something that you get extra points for when you apply to housing.
Any idea how many states give the homeless priority across the country? Is it more?
I actually do not know that statistic at all.
Huh, that would be interesting to look at. Well, in San Francisco, we've got 27,000 people on the public housing list alone. And right now, you can barely get a studio for $2,000 a month. And the other thing that's kind of shocking is when you look at HUD, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, between 1978 and 1983, their budget was slashed by 77%. So is that why we're here today? Adrian?
Yes, I mean, I think lack of housing is the reason why we're here. I mean, we have an increased need because we have these people online that are homeless and need to have these resources provided to them, and there just are not enough resources. There aren't enough advocacy groups like our group that goes out and does this work. It's very hard work to connect people to housing. There's not enough homeless shelter beds for people to go to when they're in crisis, especially for women in Boston. There's not as many beds as there are for men, and then just the lack of affordable housing, because when you apply to housing, if you have a great advocate and you're working hard yourself on it, you can be on many, many lists and just be waiting on a wait list for housing for a very long amount of time.
James, you wanted to jump in?
Yeah, I wanted to jump in that you're on the East Coast, and you were saying that your housing is just about gone through the roof and persons cannot afford to get rent. What do you think about here in San Francisco? Just as Rose just said, even a SRO with absolutely nothing in it but a room, very dirty, with roaches, is $650 a month. $650 a month. Anything above that, if there's no other source of income, that means displacement to the streets. One of the things that I heard you say with regards to the persons that you're working with is the housing. And we at Episcopal Community Services provide housing and shelter. And our director, I said, and talked with him, he stated that what we need is more housing and more shelter.
Right.
And one of the other things that I remember is that this used to be the domain of religious organizations. Where are they? What happened to them? They were the ones who really provided those kinds of services through the years. And everyone turned to asking the government to do that. This is not only a process that is sociological in it and its effect. It also becomes a passion thing. Where's the passion? Where are those with passion who don't see the need to reach out and assist in any way through advocacy, as Barbara's talking about, and even digging into their pockets? We need more resources. And everybody's sitting on the sidelines waiting for the government to do it.
And just to concur what James was just got through saying, the government, the federal government, done also made it real hard for you to go through the paperwork. Mm. Sometimes they put information, they tell you the information, but they make it hard for you to work through the process. They don't give you direct, precise processing. You go here, you go there. Mm. Everybody telling you something different. How do you know what to do? Who to go to? They direct you to this supervisor. They might direct you to that social worker. But that social worker can just go so far. But she has the information. Why don't she try to, why don't they simplify it for our older Americans? And also for our youth and children. We need those too. Those are people that's coming behind us.
Yeah, and you know, we'll talk. We have full lines. I just want to get a few callers before break, and then we will talk about just the everyday difficulties in being homeless, because a lot of people just don't realize how difficult it is. Let's first go to Lark in San Francisco. Hi, Lark. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. First, I want to say I love KOW and I love your show.
Thank you.
And I wanted to say it seems a solution might be stopping it before it happens. And just a brief story, I'm from San Francisco. And a few years ago, we had a family friend, a woman who I think was about 80. She had done all the right things in her life, you know, worked hard. And she had lived in a place for years. I don't know whether it was 30 or 40 years. And the owner evicted her. I think it was supposed to be, it was kind of a little downstairs, tiny little place from where he lived. And I think he did it on the grounds of that it was going to be a family member move in. We actually think that never happened. But even if it was, in any case, I would spend every day calling city agencies, and they would all say, well, go on a list. And my question always was, well, where is she going to go for that year, 2 years when she's on the list? Finally, they moved her into what was literally a crack house in the Tenderloin. We moved all, it was a nightmare. She ended up finally after going to one other place, going to Laguna Honda and dying. We think she died because she just gave up. I mean, she was fine. So it seems to me one of the solutions might be, because she was fine where she was. She was a healthy woman, you know, and as I said, she had, not that I think there's anything wrong with getting help now and then, but she had
Lark, I hate to cut you off, but hold on.
No, that's fine.
No, but please hold on a minute, because I definitely want to hear your solution. We just have to take a quick break, but hold the line and we'll come back and continue this conversation about the older homeless population.
You're listening to Your Call on KLW. Every Tuesday, the Your Call team sends out a weekly email newsletter that lets you know what's coming up on the show and gives you resources to let you learn more and get involved. Subscribe today so you'll know what's coming up and can submit your questions and comments before the show goes on the air. It's free and easy to sign up. Just click the email newsletter link at yourcallradio.org. And you can participate in today's show by calling toll-free 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK, or send email to feedback@yourcallradio.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, Holly Kernan will have a conversation with Megan O'Rourke, author of the memoir, The Long Goodbye. She says most Westerners are uncomfortable around death, and the rituals that once guided mourners have mostly disappeared. So how do we grieve? What is grief? And how have you coped with the death of a loved one? That is tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line. feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we are talking about the growing older homeless population in the United States. According to the latest numbers from Hearth, an organization working to end elder homelessness, there were 40,750 homeless people 62 or older last year. Homeless advocates say that that number might be low, actually. And as the nation's population ages, that number is expected to more than double by 2050. So today we're talking about why this is happening, who is this population, what struggles are they facing, and what services are available. How should society respond to this? How should the government respond to this? We've got full lines right now, but we'll have one open in just a few minutes at your call. I'm sorry, 866-798-8255. It'd be great if you could leave a comment on our website so others can see it and then comment on it, yourcallradio.org. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we're joined by James Powell, case manager with the Cannon Kipp Senior Center. They provide a hot lunch, case management, and community services to low-income people 60 years and older. James has been doing this work for 20 years. Barbara Coleman was homeless for 11 months until she found housing through the St. Anthony Foundation. She now volunteers with St. Anthony, the Tenderloin Garden Project, and Senior Action and Planning for Elders. Adrienne Beloyne is Director of Outreach with Hearth, and they're located in Boston. And let's go back to Lark. Are you still with us?
I am. Thank you.
Sure.
And I don't know if, in other words, can you make it just a flat thing that even for an owner move-in, that a person who has lived in a place for years that is 80 years old cannot be evicted because there just is, you know, she lived on her Social Security. Would there be any way of making that a law, or can't you force some, you know? Anyway, that seems to me a huge problem and would also be a solution if these huge amounts of people were not made homeless in the first place.
Right. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Adrienne, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think there needs to be a subsidy to the housing because, you know, if folks are living in private housing with a private landlord, that landlord would need to be compensated because they have their own mortgage bills and expenses to keep up. So I think that the role of government is extremely important. It's only going to increase as far as being able to provide the supplement for the housing to exist.
James, what do you think of a law like that? Is there anything in this country that protects people over 65, even 70, let's say?
I believe that, well, first of all, the question you asked about the law, yeah. I don't know. So I'm not going to address that. But I recognize that one of the things we might be able to do around the issue of housing is housing sharing and apartment sharing. Okay, so you've got 400. But if you've got three people with 400, you've got 1,200. And I've noticed this, and I have observed this with our populations coming into this country who come almost with nothing but move in the whole family. And persons leave and go to work, and one person stays home and fixes food. I remember this from the 40s as an African American during World War II. This process worked. People moved in together and they shared expenses. And I think that's one thing that may not be being considered. We have to look at new ways. Mm. We cannot continue to use the old paradigm. We've got to look for new ways of providing this kind of housing and services for a population that is aging and dying.
Well, thank you again for calling in, Lark. We've got full lines, so let's go through a few callers and then we'll get responses. Let's hear from Ed in Santa Cruz. Hi, Ed. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. I'm a lawyer, and I was after I was practicing for about 40 years, some friends started bringing me homeless people as clients. I discovered how harsh it is. The city of Santa Cruz has a camping ban. And so I want to respond to the idea, the question about how government responds to the homeless situation, mm-hmm. especially the prosecutors and the courts.
Right.
So in Santa Cruz, like I said, there's a camping ban, which means you can't sleep anywhere out in public. And so we, in 2010, the summer of 2010, I initiated a sleep-in at the courthouse, Santa Cruz County Courthouse. And for 30 days, they left us alone to sleep every night there because the city of Santa Cruz refused to come over and enforce their camping ban. They said, your county, that's a county property, so, you know, you handle it. So the county finally, they scrambled around. They finally came up with a state law that Penal Code 647E, unlawful lodging, mm-hmm. which means, which says that you can't lodge anywhere without the permission of the owner, whether it's public or private property, not even in a vehicle. So we had lots of old people at our camping protest. A woman was 72, and they just then they started prosecuting us, and they called us misdemeanants, and this is a misdemeanor, in other words, to unlawfully lodge. So we challenged it on constitutional grounds because there are so many wonderful principles that are set out in our federal and state constitutions for liberty and privacy.
Thank you for calling in, Ed. We're actually going to do a show about these sit lie laws on the 25th. So please tune in for that. There was a case involving a 60-something homeless man in the Tenderloin who was recently arrested for sitting on a milk cart. He got 30 days in jail. They put two prosecutors on the case, and they wanted to throw him in jail on three counts, 1 year each count. So we're talking 3 years for right. sitting on a milk crate in the Tenderloin.
Yeah, we've got similar sentences here.
And for people who live outside of the area, the Tenderloin has a very large homeless population.
Right.
And so he pled guilty. He's now on 3 years probation. But the public defender was absolutely shocked that they would want to go after him for 3 years. So we're going to spend an entire hour on this. Really important. On the 25th. So please okay. tune in and try
Great.
To call in. Thank
All
you.
Right.
But to that yeah. question, just quickly, James, how are these laws affecting the older homeless population? Because we're seeing them spread across the country.
One area that it affects is that there is this displacement and this walking, this going from one place to another, one place to the other. I would also, but I do want to add that when compared, when San Francisco is compared to other cities, there's a greater level of compassion in San Francisco, and people need to understand that. When we see what we see in San Francisco, when we see in the Tenderloin, just go to other cities and see how people are ignored mm-hmm. and the level of insensitivity. Yes, we need more. We need more services. We need more housing. But I do want to say that I see when comparing with other cities and other places that I've worked, I do see that sensitivity. We are currently having meetings. We're meeting on shelter access. And when I say we, I mean both providers as well as those who are receiving the services. We're meeting to develop a new direction. And I'm very optimistic about it. I'm very optimistic when compared to just 2008, when many recommendations were brought by the local homeless coordinating board and shelter monitoring committee. We're now working on that here in 2013, but there are some changes that are underway, and I wanted to interject that everything is not totally lost.
Well, and you make a good point about what's happening in San Francisco, because I heard over and over there's always food available if you need it. And also, a lot of people that I met are told to come here because of the services and also the weather, frankly. I was recently in Los Angeles, met a woman from Wisconsin who moved from Wisconsin because she cannot afford housing there. She came to LA for the sun, frankly, because can you imagine being homeless in Wisconsin on the streets? So let's hear. This is Susan, and she is 65, recently arrived in Los Angeles.
I have Social Security, and because I was a housewife and I was on disability, would you like the amount? $400 a month.
That's it. Yep. And do you have family?
I'm not close. I have 6 children, but I'm not close to them at this point. I have lived with my family in the past, but it just didn't work out.
Okay. So what was it like when you got here?
What was it like when I got here? I was down on Skid Row in downtown LA, and the conditions are very crowded. From what I understand, there are bed bugs. Fighting. I saw fights. It was a bad experience.
That's Susan. I met her on Venice. There's a group that hands out food, 1,500 meals over the course of 3 days, and she was volunteering with them. She's living in a shelter, a winter shelter in Venice. She's got to get out in February, and at that point, she doesn't know where she's going. She's got 6 children. Barbara, this is the other thing that was shocking to me, is to meet a lot of people who have family, and they've been either ostracized, the family doesn't care, they're not getting any help. How common is this?
Well, it's very common. I work also with the San Francisco Family Service Agency, and they serve a large population of elderly people, some youth, but mostly elderly. And they used to have a program over there. They recently, for budget cuts, they had to let it go. And I was one of the ladies that used to go out to find these older people that was closeted in the Tenderloin area mostly, and around and about in the Bayview, all over. And these people didn't know anything about why we was there or what was this service all about or anything like that.
So you're on the streets on a regular basis,
yes,
trying
I
to
am
help
every day
older homeless people navigate the system.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they don't know how to navigate the system. Well, I went to St. Anthony. St. Anthony didn't. The reason that you don't know how to talk to a social worker is because you don't know what to say. You're overwhelmed by being homeless. Mm. And their understanding, but the understanding just goes is, well, what do you need? What do you want? Do you want some clean clothing? Are you hungry now? We can feed you. But sometimes they can't convey to that person what they really, really deep down want.
I also heard that because so many women have been caregivers, there's
yes.
a lot of pride,
yes.
and they don't like to ask for help, and they don't like to say that they're homeless.
That is all part of it. That's all part of being homelessness. You have this inner thing in you. I've been taking care of this all this while, and now I find myself in that position, and I don't know what to say.
We have a caller who works with the homeless population. Let's hear from James in San Francisco. Hi, James.
Hi. Hi, Rose, and hi, Ken Powell. This is James Chiancini. I'm here.
Hi, Ken. Jen.
You know, I just wanted to say on the front lines of people who are doing some of the best work out there, the work Mr. James Powell is doing cannot be underestimated. He's one of the leaders, one of the heroes out there in South Market and Tenderloin communities with the seniors. So I just wanted to give him some well-deserved props and credit because, and they need to give you a raise right away, sir. But okay, that said, the reason I'm calling, and also there's a really big population of people who are about to become homeless. I think you mentioned it earlier, and those are seniors who are or people with disabilities who are living in rent-controlled apartments, and they're just walking around in San Francisco carrying huge targets on their back because the landlord knows when they're out they can, you know, quadruple the rent. And so what you're seeing and what we're seeing every day is a lot of people getting pressured by landlords, being, you know, sometimes harassed. Usually it's very low level, but in an attempt to get them out. And these are folks, they've been in their house like, you know, maybe 15, 20 years or more, and they have some disability issues. Maybe they're older. they can't navigate the system as well. And one person, you know, she mails in her check, the landlord holds it, and then they don't cash it. She mails in the other one, and they hold it, and they cash them both at the same time in an attempt to bounce the check to give them an excuse.
Wow.
Things like that. You see these. So what she has to do, every time it's time she pays her check, she comes in, and we call, and I'm like, hi, this is the case manager. I'm trying to make sure that, you know, you're going to cash the check. And, oh, we'll cash it. We cashed it yesterday, and then they cash it the next day. So the point I'm saying, with the housing crisis, with the cost of living and the cost of rents in San Francisco leading to really a mass forced relocation of these older people and people on moderate and low incomes, I mean, it's only going to get worse, and it's much bigger than all of this. And it's just, if we didn't have people like Ken, like James Powell, and Ken also over there, and Lolita and all the people at Ken and Kip and St. Anthony's doing the great work, I mean, we'd be in a worse situation than we are now. Mm-hmm. So it's economics. It's all economics. Everybody knows the cause of homelessness is absence of affordable housing.
Mm. Well, thank you so much, James. And James works with Barbara with the Senior Action and Planning for Elders organization, doing amazing work. And the demand is so high. People are so overtaxed. We have a question from Rob, Barbara. He says, important and horrifying show. Cannot imagine this is happening in the America I grew up in. I'm seeing more elderly women asking for change, he says. What can be done to help them? And I also just want to mention that a lot of older women in San Francisco are going to a Woman's Place shelter, and they're sleeping in chairs, right? I mean, this is shocking. A lot of older people do not have a place to sleep, so they're sleeping in chairs.
I want to comment on that,
yeah.
And that is that in itself leads credence to the need for more assistance and help from all segments of our society. Yes, women who've been sleeping in chairs for 2 years because they feel safe and secure at a Woman's Place and would rather stay at a Woman's Place in a chair than to be in a bed in a shelter where they feel totally intimidated and feel totally insecure. I just want to make sure that we're not indicting because of the chairs. There are several shelters that have chairs because they've got an overflow. What are you going to do? It's better to be in a chair out of the elements than to be in the elements. This is a dilemma. This is a dilemma that must be addressed, that must be checked.
That is James Powell, case manager with the Ken and Kip Senior Center. Adrian Beloyne is director of outreach with Hearth. And Barbara Coleman was homeless for 11 months until she found housing through the St. Anthony Foundation. And now I would like to welcome Bevan Dufty to the show. Bevan is director of Hope Housing Opportunity Partnership and Engagement for the office of San Francisco Mayor Ed Lee. Hi, Bevan. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So this issue is a growing problem across the country based on homeless advocates saying that the older population is about to explode. What is the city of San Francisco doing to address this issue?
We're doing a number of different things. Right now, the city is involved in a shelter access work group. And so Supervisor Jane Kim from District 6 that represents the Tenderloin and South of Market, she sponsored a resolution. And so initially, we did a work process looking at shelter access. And one of the things that you see is that a line-based system is discriminatory towards people that are elderly, frail, or disabled. And so we are moving in the next month or so to enable people to seek a shelter reservation through the 311 system. People always talk about the lines 5 nights a week in front of Glide that sometimes start as early as 3 in the morning,
right,
and that there are only a handful of 90-day beds that are available. And so we've really had a collaborative process with the Coalition on Homelessness, providers, city agencies, and consumers, and really understood that we need to make other access points available, and I'm really excited that 311 is going to be one of those access points, and people will be able to get text messages. You know, we've been advocating very strongly with the California Public Utilities Commission that Lifeline phone services have to be extended to cell phones, and that has happened, and I'm extremely proud of that. And we have two providers, both Nexus and Assurance, that are coming into California, and I think that's going to be very relevant to homeless individuals and particularly seniors to be able to get a text message telling them where their shelter bed. One of the things that we're working on through our shelter access work group is setting aside beds for seniors. Obviously, there are a large number of seniors that are living in our shelter system, but beyond that, we want to set aside between 5 to 10 beds a night that would be dedicated for seniors that might come late in the day or others. And I heard James talking about chair sleeping, and there certainly are people that seek that, whether it's at MSC South or whether it's at a woman's place. But we also know that individuals that do sleep in chairs have a propensity to have edemas and other problems, which, you know, can be very dangerous and debilitating to them.
Right. And I did meet a lot of women who didn't feel safe in the shelters. And also, Bevan, it was shocking to go to some of these shelters I went at 5 in the morning, and I met people who had been there since 4 a.m. So they had to wake up at 3 a.m. from the shelter, get on the bus, maybe go across town to get in line to hopefully find a bed. And then if they do, they find out by 7, they might not be able to go to the bed until 5 p.m. So they have all day to kill, all the time to kill. So they might ride BART all day and end up in Fremont. And while you were talking, Barbara Coleman was putting her fist in the air at some of these changes and proposals. And Barbara, I'm wondering, what's your response to what Bevan said, and do you have any questions for him?
Well, I already knew that we had a meeting at City Hall, and Supervisor Kim's off the district that I live in the Tenenbaum, and this developer did not want seniors and youth and children in that area that he's developing. So he postponed this meeting for later this month. And I could see right then and there what population of people that he wanted in the low-income area, okay, where he proposed to develop. And I could see that. And then that's what made me thinking about, well, where are we going? Where are we going? Where are the older population going? What are they going to do with us? Okay? And that's the question that I have before Supervisor Bevan Devin.
Yes, certainly. Mm-hmm. Former supervisor.
Yeah, former. Yeah, I know. I keep thinking that you're still there.
Oh, I am. I'm just in the basement now.
Okay.
Well, let me respond and say a couple of other things. You know, we've got a couple of major buildings coming online, and I'm sure Barbara, as I do, remember fondly Mary Helen Rogers, who was a longtime activist coming out of the Western Addition, who really fought the ills of redevelopment. And in her honor, Chinatown Community Development has partnered with the city and is building 100 units of senior housing for very low-income seniors, and 20 of the units are set aside for homeless seniors. And one of the things that's important to us is that oftentimes you will find in lotteries for affordable housing that members of the African-American community do not do as well. And some of it is that other communities have very experienced providers that are in there working on applications and making sure that applications aren't being kicked for lack of financial data or whatever it may be. And so we have been working. The health department has been really working to ensure that we're doing outreach in the Western Addition, or even in the Bayview, for example, where individuals who've been displaced from the Western Addition may be residing. We have plans to build a 100-bed shelter in the Bayview neighborhood. Currently, the service that we have there, we have Mother Brown's United Council, which is a drop-in resource center, which has 60 beds, and then there is an emergency shelter at Providence Baptist Church, where people have mats that they're able to sleep on, and it's there probably 90 to 100 individuals nightly that are there. But we're going to open up a full-service shelter hopefully in the next year, and we're really excited about that as well.
You mentioned about Providence. I said earlier that we do need the religious community to become more active. The resources available through the churches and other religious organizations in San Francisco are phenomenal. the buildings that I see, that sometimes buildings owned by various religious groups are closed.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that we they don't reach out to provide shelter in those buildings that they're no longer using?
Well, HOPE is actively engaged with some of the religious communities in the Bayview community. So Reverend Aurelius Walker at True Hope Church of God in Christ, we are working with Reverend Walker and other partners to focus on African-American veterans. One out of every four black veterans in the United States is homeless, and we know that many of these are seniors at this stage. Bayview Senior Services, the multipurpose center run by Kathy Davis, they have a senior ex-offender program, which is recognizing that we have people that are in their 60s and 70s that have barriers and obstacles because they've been in the justice system and are working to lift those barriers and have provided transitional housing. But our president has said that we are going to end homelessness among veterans by 2015. And so we are very excited. We opened up the Veterans Commons at 150 Otis just this month, and hopefully next week we'll be opening 32 additional efficiencies for veterans. And so that is definitely reaching a large African-American senior population.
And, you know, I wish we had another hour because we almost have to end the show. Adrian, are cities preparing for this? I mean, we're hearing what's happening in San Francisco. Just in 30 seconds, do cities see this coming?
Well, I just wanted to say how much I've appreciated listening to this conversation because it really rings true to what we experience in Boston. And I'd love to just put out there kind of one of the solutions that our agency is promoting, and that is, you know, once you do have the housing that's affordable and subsidized, it really needs to have services
right.
in place. Because we talked before about how a lot of older adults do not have supports from their family coming in, or people have lost family members or maybe are estranged from them. And you really need in your older years someone to kind of help you continue to navigate systems, have health care in place and,
right.
and mental health services. And our housing has that on board. And that's a whole nother challenge.
Yeah, it's a great point. We barely even touched on mental illnesses, but we will definitely continue this discussion. Adrian Beloine is with Hearth. James Powell is with the Cannon Kipp Senior Center. Bevan Dufty is with the Housing Opportunity Partnership Engagement, director of that, the City of San Francisco. Barbara Coleman is an activist working on these very issues. She used to be homeless. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll continue this important conversation.
And thank you very much for having us today.
Thanks for inviting us.
Here's what's coming up tomorrow. How do we grieve? On the next Jura Call, we'll have a conversation with Megan O'Rourke, author of the memoir, The Long Goodbye. She says most Westerners are uncomfortable around death, and the rituals that once guided mourners and communities have mostly disappeared. So what is grief? And what is it like to mourn when there are so few rituals for observing and externalizing grief? Join us at 10 or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. How have you coped with the death of a loved one? It's Your Call with Holly Kernan and you.